E2. Number 3B.
Well, let's take the next one. Matrices themselves provide a very powerful condensed language. It's a powerful language because it's a condensed language. We will see that with just a few symbols we can express a whole, say a whole prophet, or the whole story of a chapter in the textbook, just by a few symbols, if those symbols are correct. So they provide a very powerful condensed language. Therefore, instead of telling the whole story of, say, Nahum, the prophet Nahum, I can just say that in a few terms, and then I know what is in it. It's a very powerful condensed language in which complicated mathematical statements, in us, ontological statements, can be expressed simply. Therefore, the gain we have here is that matrix is again a method of reducing something which is complex into simplicity. And naturally, always, whenever I can reduce a complex situation to simplicity, I gain more understanding, because one is able to understand something simple in its simplicity. So the insight into the problem becomes much more transparent. The next one brings out another thing. A matrix is important for categorical, relational, and structural thinking. We get away from the atomistic thinking. Atomistic thinking is the most difficult method of thinking. That's why mankind is burdened, so to say, with an enormous lot of data today. All the mass media, the education, books, and so on, they all give to everyone today, even not only to those who go to school, but to the whole population, an enormous information of data. And at one time in the 17th century, one has been saying that knowledge is power, is dominion. But it doesn't seem to work out that way, because with that knowledge that is furnished to each one of us, we should have so much power that we could easily be able to solve every day's problem. But we don't, because it's a false kind of knowledge that we have gained up to now. It is a disordered knowledge, an unstructured knowledge. It was just fact-presenting knowledge, but not fact-arranging knowledge. And matrix is one of the big methods to take those infinite facts and that many facts and order them in categories. That's the first step, to be able to order a lot of data into a few categories. This is the wonder of wonders, which no scientist up today in all the sciences where they have investigating this phenomena have ever found out why man is able to take those infinite phenomena with which we have to deal with in everyday life and can put them into categories. Nobody knows why we are have that ability and how it works, that we can take the various a stool and the chair and the sofa and the table and things like that and say, this is furniture, to put it into the category of furniture. How on earth that works? Nobody has found out, but it's so natural to us that we can take hundreds of different objects and put them under just one category, furniture. We wouldn't put them under the category of color, because they don't belong into that. Though the chair may have a different color than the table, and the table a different color than the cupboard, you see, we have a sense within us that can categorize. And this is what we have to use and culture in the science of being, because education has never done that. religious education has always been teaching just in single facts. The minister would come to the pulpit and say, "Today I preach you on the following verse," and he would just read one verse and then talk a whole hour about that one verse. That's that. So religious education has never really trained us in thinking in categories, in ontological categories. And Mrs. Eddy was the first one who began to see categories and was able to reduce the infinite into our three categories, the category of the synonymous term, and second in the category of the operation, the four sides of the Holy City, and third into the category of the levels. This was the terrific contribution which she gave. We were talking about this last week in that class, so I don't have to repeat it here. But matrix is that which helps us to think in categories. It further helps us to think in relational thinking. This is that which helps us in true logic, so that we relate things which can be related and don't relate things which cannot be related. And this is a great point, because so often in theology, religion, and in ordinary Christian Science, things are related which can't be related, and therefore never made sense, and therefore these endless arguments that go on between Christian scientists, who is right and what is right and how the other statement is wrong. Because the relationships have first to be defined. And finally, it says matrix helps in structural thinking, quite clearly. The moment you have categories and know how to relate categories, you get structure. And structural thinking is a much more economical thinking than any other thinking. So matrix helps us in that work. The next one I have taken reads, "A matrix is a means to the most economic representation." Again, we have already touched on that the matrix is really reducing the infinite possibilities and relationships and facts into just a very simple economic representation. So you can see a matrix is always a method of teaching, a method of representing. Matrix is not something that exists in being itself. It's a method of teaching, a method of learning, a method of understanding that infinite one in all its infinite aspects. The next reads about matrix that it is a purely conceptual, not an observable, construct. We can never somewhere observe a matrix. It's a conceptual form and is used that way. It is therefore a means for understanding. It is superseding the last traces of physical detectability. It aids structure recognition. This is one of the main points, you see, which we will see over and over this week, that a matrix method helps us to recognize structure, where without a matrix consciousness or a matrix method, we will always only see thousands and thousands of isolated statements which don't seem to have any relationship with each other, or where we don't see the right relationship with each other. So if we have, say, a text that runs over 80 pages or something like that, and therefore contain perhaps 800 sentences and contains perhaps a few thousand terms, matrix can put just a simple, clear-cut structure into that big amount of terms, so that in one view you can see the whole structure of those 80 pages. We did that last week, you know, for those who have been here, for instance, with the chapter on Christian Science practice that covers over 80 pages, and we could see that we had a very clear cut, easily recognizable structure of it. It provides a cognizable overall view. Yes, we have seen that. It's like being a bird that flies above and looks down and in one view can see the infinite variety of the land that lies beneath, in one view. Whereas if we are on the earth and don't have that overall view, we never know quite really where we are going, in which direction we are going, what we will meet in the next minute. Whereas structure recognition always sees, always in one view, the whole, always goes out from the comprehensive sense and never from the atomistic sense. And I guess Bucky Fuller here is very hot on that, that man is fundamentally born as a comprehensivist and not as an atomist, that he inwardly has that ability to see the whole in one view. It helps as an act in memory support, we had that already. It is a steering mechanism. This is a big one again. A few of them are very important. This one, that it is a steering mechanism. See, if we see a subject in its matrix form, it really helps to steer our consciousness because that matrix is all composed of true relationships, of true interrelationships, and therefore thought is led in an intelligent, wise way from one point to the other within that whole matrix. And therefore we can also see that many of these matrices lend themselves as a cybernetic model. And cybernetic, you know, comes from the steersman. It's a steering mechanism which shows, especially when we use such a matrix for practice, that it then shows through that steering mechanism really a flow chart of practice, as we have done last year at the seminar. So these are the advantages of using a matrix. Perhaps I should mention, as we approach nearer to our subject, that very often, naturally, you can have as a place value, as a matrix element, again a whole matrix. For instance, if you take the text of Science and Health, the first 16th chapter, which formed the main body of the textbook, because the 17th and 18th chapter are appendices, so to say. But if we take the main body of Science and Health, there's the 16 chapters in a 4x4 matrix, so that each chapter is a point of intersection, a matrix element. We can see that each chapter itself could be represented by a matrix itself. So that when one has such a situation where each element within the matrix is a matrix, then we speak about a super matrix or hyper matrix, super matrix. Another point in way of terminology which we must keep in mind, because we'll speak about it this week, is that the term diagonal plays a big part. And here we must make a distinction between the diagonal in a 4x4 matrix and a diagonal matrix. A 4x4 matrix, if you have a 4x4 matrix, then actually the diagonal is what? Are those boxes which lie in the diagonal line starting in within the array of the matrix at the upper left corner of the array. That would be this point here, and goes down to the right lower box. So the diagonal would lead right through word as word, Christ as Christ, Christianity as Christianity, science as science. And you can see that on that diagonal lay only those boxes, those elements, which accentuate their own nature. If it's a word, it doesn't accentuate anything else but the word. When it comes to the Christ, it doesn't accentuate anything else but the Christ. When it comes to Christianity, it doesn't accentuate anything else but Christianity, and so is science. So this is called the diagonal of a matrix, and naturally, when you know the least thing about geometry, then you know that such a diagonal is only possible in a square matrix. It's not possible in a rectangular matrix. If you have a 4x7 matrix, geometrically it doesn't work. And ideally, it doesn't work either. So this is the diagonal, and when we talk about the diagonal, then in the later matrices, you just know what is meant by it. This has to be distinguished from a diagonal matrix. Okay? That's the term, a diagonal matrix. In a diagonal matrix, only those elements, boxes, that lie on the diagonal have a value and the others have no value. That's the difference. So in a diagonal matrix, say here again, a 4x4 matrix, if a subject is represented as a diagonal matrix, then the text would only have values that lie within the word as word, Christ as Christ, Christianity as Christianity, and science as science, whereas all the others have no value. They are naught. So you could put in all the other ones a naught. So the text would only be interested in teaching and conveying the diagonal of a 4x4 matrix here and leave out all the other values because they may be considered at that point as secondary or as irrelevant to the subject. As we go on together, we'll see how the Bible has and presents such diagonal matrices, and actually at the point where each one of us is most interested in the subject. So please make that note for yourself, that you never mix up anymore the diagonal of a matrix and a diagonal matrix. Just another few words about making a matrix. There are two ways of making a matrix, especially in our subject. There are two methods, and interestingly enough, one of the methods we use mostly is that method which in other sciences is used the least. It's upside down in our subject again. What are these two methods of formulating a matrix? We can formulate a matrix first deductively, through deduction. How do we go about when we construct it deductively? Well, when we do that, then we have first a subject which is defined, the A in our formula. We say, let us make a matrix about, say, the Christ. That would be the A in the subject. And we would then define the two indices. And would say that the Christ is operating according to two categories, and you would define your two indices. And when you have done that, then you would go on, as we have done in our first two matrices, and put into the boxes the values that are given by the point of intersection of those two indices. And so we would arrive at the Christ matrix in this case, which would give us a 16-fold aspect of the Christ. Yes? That would be the deductive method. That deductive method is used in other signs mostly. In Christian Science, up to now, I have only seen one of these matrices, and that is John Dolly's matrix. Up to now, he has been the only one that, through induction, has given us a matrix in the field of the Infinite One. And I will show you how it did it in an hour or so. The second method of building a matrix is the inductive method. And this is the method that we have used mostly. What is that inductive method? The inductive method takes a text and starts out from the hypothesis, not from the fact, from a hypothesis that it could be a matrix. We don't know if it is, but it could be a matrix. Meaning that we take the hypothesis that the writer was writing along a matrix logic, which is naturally a big hypothesis, which may prove not to be so at all. Then we start from that working hypothesis and say, all right, I investigate the parts of that subject. Say, you would have 16 prophets, and so you could, as a hypothesis, think that these 16 prophets make up a whole matrix on the prophetic era. And what you would do, therefore, would be to analyze each prophet and ask yourself, now, what is, in one sentence, in one epitome, the main subject of that prophet? All right, stop for a moment.